Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. This is a law talk show. We talk law with you on any question, any subject. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Welcome to all of our stations. This show is simulcast on several stations, and we welcome you as listeners. You can call us and ask us a question on any legal subject. Any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys, we're glad to do this, and we can answer your questions, and we'll get you some help. And last week, we had a couple of people that we had to call back after the show. We didn't get to it this week. That does happen to us once in a while, and we're sorry for that. You will get the calls, and we just couldn't get it done this week. Brad and I are getting ready for a three-week jury trial coming up, and this week was challenging. So, anyway, 303-713-8255. That being said, Brad, we've had some questions, several, on hit and run. It seems like every day in the paper, in the news, is another hit and run. And so let's just talk a little bit about the fact that when you're involved in a hit and run, seems like the most egregious ones are at night, but that doesn't always happen that way. But what you never do, you're involved in a hit and run, somebody hits you, you're in your car, you're on your bike, you're on your motorcycle, you're in your truck, it doesn't matter. They leave the scene, you can't figure out who they are. You don't leave the scene. That you should call the police because your insurance company is going to ask later for all that information.
Right. Colorado law really emphasizes that when a motorist is involved in a crash, really no matter the degree of injury or damage, you're supposed to stop. You're supposed to give certain information. You're supposed to give your legal name. You're supposed to give your driver's license. And obviously, it's an out-of-state. You're supposed to give that information. You're supposed to give the identification number of the vehicle involved in some way, license plate or whatever. You're supposed to give your insurance information. You're supposed to give the name and address and the contact information for that insurance carrier. And that's what's required. So when you stop, this is supposed to be an exchange of information, or when you're involved in a hit, when you've hit somebody. The basic thing is when you get hit and run people, usually they're hitting and running for a reason. And that reason can be a number of different reasons, but you've got to make sure that you're paying attention to who hit you. And if you can, you try and get their license plate number at a minimum. Maybe if you can see an identification so you can get an idea of who they are and what they're about, that might help a lot. But you need to try to get yourself the best you can, in the best position you can, to be able to identify what happened. And if witnesses have come up to help you, if your car's been disabled or if you've been hurt and people come to the scene of the accident, you need to ask those people to stay long enough to get the necessary information to be able to prove to your own insurance company, because there's going to be a claim with your own insurance company. At least hopefully there is, Gary, because hopefully you've got underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage.
Right, and that just triggers right into the next point. So let's say Brad had hit it right on the nail on the head. You got to get all that information. But let's say you can't get the information. The car's gone. It's at night. You don't know what it is. You don't even know if it was a truck or a SUV or a car. You don't know. And you have no identification information, but there's debris on the street. And if you know, first thing you do is attend to yourself medically. But the second thing you do is make sure there's witnesses. And the other thing you do is call the police. And you say, well, I'll call the police later. No, you won't. You will call the police right now, because when you make the UM claim, you can read our book on it, Hit and Run, Uninsured Motorist Claim with your own company. When you make that claim, they're going to investigate this and they're going to ask you, did you call the police? How do you prove your car was hit? How do you prove this hit and run? Well, one of the ways you prove it are witnesses. One of the ways you prove it is call the police. And if there's nobody around, no witnesses, no identification, no data, no anything, you call the police and you make a report and they come and you wait for them unless you're injured, and then you call the ambulance, period. That's what you do. That's how you start with it. But you can get a copy of our book, Hit and Run. It's a definitive guideline in Colorado on how you handle hit and run accidents. And they happen every day. It seems like the more egregious ones every day. And so you need this. But the last half of our book on hit and run, and it's free, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. The last half of our book covers step-by-step instructions on how you get the appropriate and proper insurance to cover you for a hit and run right now, today, period. Do it, because if you don't have it, then you don't have the coverage. Then you have nowhere to go. the other person's gone. That's a UM event, uninsured motorist event. So you can get a free book. You can call right here to the studio. We'll send you a hard copy. You can call our law firm. We'll send you a hard copy. If you want to download a free e-copy, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Bruce from Colorado Springs is joining us now. Good morning, Bruce. What can we do for you?
I hope it's a simple one. I've got chickens in the city, and I've got neighbors fussing like crazy. The city animal control code, the code folks have been out at no less than 6 times inspecting the skirts, making sure I'm all legal. But the neighbors are still calling this to be an annoyance because they don't want them in the neighborhood. I'm trying to figure out what to do, how to stop it.
Okay, so the animal control people have been out, so you've not been charged with a zoning, ordinance violation, anything like that, right?
No, I'm legal every time. I let them come out. They inspect several times, and it's just become too much. I feel like I've got to put the brakes on these people.
Okay, and so half a dozen times they've come out. You are proper with zoning. Nobody's charged you. No ordinance violations, nothing like that. It's just kind of harassment, right?
Yes, sir.
So what is the harassment? What's the complaint they're making? Are they saying it's too noisy? Are they saying they don't like odor? Or what is the complaint?
Well, they've tried every angle. This week they're out for odor. The guy stood 15 minutes in front of the coop area, couldn't smell the thing. They've been out several times because the neighbors think I've got roosters. They don't think hens make noise. So that's been disproven several times. They did the skirt check. And they just keep coming out. They've come out because they think I've got too many. It's like someone's just stretching to find a reason to make me get rid of them, I guess.
When animal control comes out, because, you know, Colorado Springs, specifically the ordinance is that you're allowed to have chickens. There's nothing wrong with that in Colorado Springs. It's permitted. So when they come out, normally what you'll find is they won't tell you who it is that's making the complaint. Are you facing that problem?
With animal control, that's correct. But this last time, it was actually code that came out. It's like they elevated it somehow. I don't know if the two offices are connected, but this is the first time code came out. And he said I could do a CORA records request, and I'm in the process of doing that to find out who the caller is. So I'm hoping I can pull all those records to figure out who the caller is.
Yeah, I was going to say the first step you want to do is find out who the caller is.
Right, we were going to just cover that with CORA and FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. Can you hang with us on the after the break, Bruce, and we'll get back to you on this answer?
Sounds good.
All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys in our day lives, but for this show, it's for you, 303-713-8255, our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell along with Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys. We are here for you. 303-713-8255 and in the mountains 970-457-1009. And if you want a free copy of any of our books, you can go to our website, download an e-copy free right there, or you can call right here at the studio and we'll send you a hard copy. Or you can call our law firm anytime, and we'll send you a hard copy free. We'll be glad to do so. People do it all the time. Right before the break, we were talking to Bruce in Colorado Springs about his having chickens and being harassed by neighbors that keep calling officials to come out and inspect. And so, Bruce, we got a take on this. You do have CORA. That's the Colorado Open Records Act, and there were a couple of amendments to it recently, and you also have on the federal level, FOIA, but we're talking about CORA right now. You can make the request, and Brad's going to cover this with you a little bit more, but you need to make it to the appropriate agency. You can't just send it to a general, like the Attorney General or the Secretary of State. You need to make it to the appropriate agency, and if you don't know which one it is, send it to all of them. And then the other thing is you need to make the request very, very specific.
Are you there, Ed?
I am.
Okay. Once you find out who the neighbor is, if you think it's a particular neighbor, Normally, I'd say try and find a way to go have a cup of coffee with him, sit down, talk to him, and discuss with him. Maybe have the facts over the fact that this is not a dangerous thing. Find out what their complaint is and see if you can't resolve it amicably with the neighbor, just talking to him. Maybe... Absolutely. Maybe you can find somebody else in the neighborhood that knows that neighbor and can be an intermediary so you're not confronting them. You can work together and have a third person there to get this taken care of.
Very good.
But the bottom line is if they insist on calling in these false complaints, first of all, you want to talk to animal control and ask them why, you know, and get the record. How many?
I have sat down with them.
Yeah, well, you want to ask animal control why they're not fining or sanctioning this person for calling in false reports.
Gotcha.
Because there comes a point where animal control should be looking and saying, look, you've called in all these false reports, you haven't got anything here, and you're harassing, and you're giving us problems. So you want to then, and we can help you with this if it keeps on, because you give us a call, we can talk to you, you know, a letter to animal control saying you need to take action, animal control, to stop false reporting. False reporting can rise to a level of crime when they're calling a government agency and they're making false reports.
Right.
You also can file a claim against them. And, you know, I would suggest if you do it, really, I would suggest going to the district court, and the district court may be unhappy of a case like this, but you can file a claim against them for harassment and seek appropriate damages and also ask that it stop, that the false reporting stop, and get an injunction and get a restraining order. And I think that's why, and if, like I said, a mutual neighbor or somebody, once you find out who this person is, that can sit down and talk to them, that's why you want to do that, is so that you can have all these remedial steps of trying to get along with your neighbors, but having them understand that you're doing nothing wrong. You're entitled to do what you do.
Right. Very good.
The other thing, Bruce, is I want to go over the fact that when you find out this person, have you ever just asked the animal control people to come out who does this?
Every time.
Every time. They won't tell you, right?
No, they won't.
Okay. So then you need to file the CORA request. And when you find out who it is, there's other steps you need to take. You can take the injunction, the lawsuit stance, but there's other preliminary steps you need to take, and we'll be glad to help you. But answering your question right here on the air is, I've always found it effective in my career on a situation like this, once you find out who the person is Brad said to meet with him, but you can also write him a letter. This is a perfect example of where you might need an attorney for a limited basis, okay? You don't need an attorney running wild and crazy doing a bunch of stuff and charging you a lot of money. But
that's right.
An attorney who can step in and contact the person and even write them a certified letter. Because I found many, many times that ends it. That stops it.
Got it.
You know, and then you're not really in a direct confrontation with the neighbor. You've got an attorney on a limited basis, and that's best for you. It's not expensive, and so I think that's the way you need to go.
Perfect.
And when you get the information of the neighbor and you start to take action, make sure you're documenting what you're doing. So the neighbor doesn't come back now and all of a sudden accuse you of harassing the neighbor. And that's why I talked about getting a third person involved. Yeah, okay. Gary makes a great point. Maybe it should be an attorney that will sit down and write him a letter. And we're happy to help you with that and say, look, you know, let's see where we can get common ground, or a neighbor that they respect, if you know, somebody like that or whatever goes on. Because once you get that information, if something goes wrong at that neighbor's house, the first person that's going to get accused is you.
Right.
Okay.
So that's why you want to take some action, but take it through somebody who can help be a witness and show that you're doing something that is simply a respectful and good neighborly conduct, is saying, hey, what can we do to stop this? And if it just comes down to, look, I just don't like you having chickens over there, then that neighbor has to learn to accept the fact that the laws allow people to do certain things in their yards, in their homes, and you're doing it, and there's nothing wrong with it.
One more point, Bruce, before we wrap up with you. You know, when you write them the attorney letter, what I like to do sometimes is write them a first letter. If it doesn't stop, is I write them a letter and say, okay, here, we haven't filed a lawsuit, but here I'm enclosing a copy of it for you.
Okay.
And if you don't stop this, we are going to file this lawsuit. And when they read it in black and white, many times behavior changes. However, when you do that, you have to mean it. If they don't, you know, if they don't stop, then you're into the litigation mode. But most of the time, it just stops. And we'll be glad to help you. Have we answered your questions, I hope?
I did. Perfect.
Okay.
All right.
We appreciate
Let
your call.
Let us know if you need help, man. Give us a call. Thank you.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our books. We had questions during the week on Hit and Run. Yes, we have a book on Hit and Run. You can get it free. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Or you can call right here in the studio. We'll send you a free copy. But we've got other books on legal game plan, Colorado motorcycle accidents, and motorcycle law. If you ride a motorcycle, you need to have a copy of this book, and it's free. JD is joining us right now. Good morning, JD. What can we do for you?
Good morning, guys. I really appreciate you taking my call, and I really appreciate your show. I need to talk to you about something very seriously. It's misconduct resulting in harmful errors. Resulting in my incarceration, which I won my appeal from harmful errors on unanimously in Denver, and it was dismissed against me in the district court. I was bone innocent, and I've heard that there is for court officials there is no statute of limitation for misconduct, and I think I need to take this a bit further so I can be reimbursed for my inconveniences.
Okay, so a couple of questions first. What were you charged with?
Okay, it was an 18-12-108, which is a previous offender with a weapon. But what had happened initially in my arrest is they had got my name mixed up with someone who did 5 years and did an armed robbery. So that was what I was initially, the bar was set extremely high. But what it comes down to is my defense originally was the right to defend myself, which everyone has the right to do in America, you know, if it's legitimate. And I was denied that affirmative in court. So, you know, they took me right from court to prison. And after I got out of prison, you know, I had an appeal set up. But, you know, 3 years after I was out of prison, my appeal went through. And the judges in Denver decided unanimously that everyone has a right to self-defense, and that the court should not have denied me that. And regardless of any priors I had from the 80, I would be eligible still to have owned a firearm, and I should never have been, you know, put through all that. And
wait a minute, JD. I got a question for you back in that you were charged with a crime. You went to court, but you weren't given a trial? What happened?
I was given a trial, but I was denied my affirmative, which I was trying to use the right to self-defense. And the prosecution... The prosecutors did not allow me the affirmative right in court, and they told the jury, misled the jury on the affirmative for 18-12-108. They didn't say the full law. They misrepresented the law, that statute in court. They said that, you know, they didn't give him the affirmative sides. They just said that he's a previous offender and he had a firearm, and you know, and
okay.
That's not allowed.
JD, right. let me ask you something. The misconduct that you're claiming here, first of all, were you out on what were you out still under court supervision of some type?
I've never had any infractions since the 80s.
So you had it, but you had a felony on your record.
Well, not exactly. I did, but they weren't anything at that time in the 80s. There were nothing. It was prior to the Clinton administration, 94, change in the law. So what I also claimed is that I had an ex post facto factor. And I also claimed that, you know, it doesn't really matter. Any of my priors would not matter my right to self-defense.
Yeah, I'm tracking with you, but I'm trying to figure out, are you claiming prosecutorial misconduct? Are you claiming police misconduct?
Yes,
were you still
prosecutional
on...
officials of the court.
Okay.
That would be prosecution misconduct. And I had it investigated by the Attorney General's office, and they found that... you know, after years later, they admit that they got my records mixed up with somebody else.
Okay.
Not have a discovery ready the day of trial. Misconduct.
Are you claiming any misconduct by the person who arrested you, or were you still under any kind of supervision?
No. The police have immunity.
Okay, right. I'm going to say you're going to have some problems with that. So your complaint goes to prosecutorial misconduct.
Correct, sir.
And you're saying what happened is you believe the... way in which the prosecutors conducted the case against you, they failed to give you proper discovery.
Right, and they didn't have that discovery the day of trial.
Okay.
And you had asked for discovery, JD?
I went and purchased discovery.
Did you ask for discovery?
Well, they've got an affirmative duty to do so, too. So.
All right, hang on. We'll talk to you after the break, okay?
Hang on. Okay. Don't go anywhere.
Okay, so thanks, JD. We'll talk to you on the other side of the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind, 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We're injury attorneys in our day lives right here on this radio. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. Eric from Catlin's is joining us. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. What's cooking?
Got some specials to run by you real quick. Now we're on our second week of these specials, so you can come in and get these one more time. Our breakfast special is going to be our Huevos Rancheros. We specialize in that. That's going to be two eggs cooked any style you'd like, atop two corn tortillas. We're going to put golden brown hash browns on that, scratch-made beans. You can get our choice of scratch-made red or green chili on that. You can add our carne adobada or our carne asada. All that stuff's made in-house, guys. That's our breakfast special for the rest of the week. And our lunch special is going to be what we call our Santa Fe salad. Now we're taking a bed of mixed greens. We're going to charbroil the chicken breast. We're going to add some hatch green chili, some cheddar jack cheese, diced tomatoes, black olives, cucumbers, carrots, bell peppers, you name it, it's on there. We got a variety of dressings to put on top of that as well. That's going to be the lunch special all week. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, we do an all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all you can eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. That's only $8.45. That's every Monday from Monday and Friday from 11 to 2. And don't forget, we got crafts and mimosas for $12.50. The weather looks beautiful today. We got the umbrellas up just in case the sun does peek through. The deck is open. The mimosas are ready to go. The flat screens are on. If you haven't come down and checked out Caitlin's before, please come and see us. And if you have, we'd love to see you again. So please come down. We've got tons to offer everybody.
You know, Eric, I was driving into work, and I noticed how nice, or into work, into this radio station. I noticed how nice it was. And I thought, this is the perfect day to be sitting out on that deck, just enjoying the day, having a cup of coffee, something to eat. I thought, there's no reason in the world why people shouldn't be there if they don't have to be somewhere else.
Absolutely. We've got a little bit of cloud cover. It's not going to be too hot. We're dog-friendly on the deck, so you can bring your pet over if you like. It's a good time. Caitlin's family would love to see everybody come out this weekend.
Sounds great.
Eric, thanks a lot. Where are you located?
Thanks, guys. We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Caldwell Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, come and see us.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, 303-713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking about to J.D. about prosecutorial misconduct. So, Brad, what do you think we got?
Well, are you still there, caller, J.D.?
Yes, sir.
Okay. J.D., when I'm looking at this thing and I'm trying to ferret it out, it sounds like there's a lot of things the prosecutor did which you have a complaint with. And you have to understand there's a difference of a court of appeals finding that your case should be reversed or your conviction should be reversed versus whether or not you can bring civil liability against a prosecutor for prosecutorial misconduct. One of the things you have to do is you have to find out if the prosecutor actually and specifically did violate certain requirements that resulted in your conviction. And it sounds like you have that, the way you're talking to us.
But you won your appeal, right, J.D.?
Yes, sir. I did win that.
Okay, wait a minute. Before we go any further, what did the appeals court say? You get a new trial? What was the ultimate result of the appeals court?
Harmful error and send back to district court. Make sure they take care of me was his last words.
Okay, so what was the ground? Was it on prosecutorial misconduct?
It was on the fact that they denied, they misrepresented a Colorado statute, and so what it did was cloud the jury's, it distorted the whole courtroom.
Okay.
They sent it back to the District 14 down here, and they dismissed it. They gave my property back, which meaning the firearm, I went to go back and get all my court costs and fees back, and the judge had been reassigned. And the new judge does not know what's going on. They think I'm guilty, and like, well, this case is over with. They dismissed it. And I'm like, well, we haven't even got through post-appeal process yet.
Well, and you say, how long ago did your decision, was your decision rendered?
Now, so this has been, since I put into for all my court costs and fees, it's been 3 years.
3 years?
You know?
Whoa.
Yeah, and I've been fighting it ever since. And, you know, now they're saying, well, the Wrongful Incarceration Act that John Hickenlooper put through approximately 3 months after my case for, like, if anyone went to prison innocent, the Dewey Bill, then they'd be reimbursed. But, you know, that has a three-year statute of limitations on it. But when I looked at federal law for misconduct, it says there's no statute of limitations for any misconduct for court officials.
All right, JD, I got to ask some specific questions. We're still going to help you, but you went to trial. You were convicted. It went up on appeal. There was determined to be prosecutorial misconduct by the Court of Appeals, right?
Right.
Then it was sent from the Court of Appeals back down to the trial court. Was it with instructions for a new trial or instructions to dismiss it? What were the instructions?
Well, they can't retry you under the double jeopardy law, but when I was blown innocent anyway, so he dismissed it. You know, they could retry you.
Okay, wait a minute. The trial court, after the Court of Appeals, dismissed your case, correct?
Correct.
Did you ever serve any time in jail?
I went to prison. I did a full sentence.
What was the full sentence?
How long?
That was the sentence that they gave me was the minimum.
What was the sentence, JD?
3 months and a year of parole in UAs.
Okay, so you had 3 months actually in prison.
In prison.
Now, were you in the county jail or were you in the state penitentiary?
I went from county to prison.
County. Okay, so you had 3 months and then you had a year on probation.
Parole.
On parole, I'm sorry, with UAs. And
right.
And during that time period, you probably had to pay regular fee for your UAs and for your and for
exactly,
parole.
Which I've not been reimbursed. They make you pay for parole, $20 a visit and $20 for UAs, which
right.
I never failed to miss. I didn't miss any of it. Didn't fail my UAs, didn't
right.
fail my appointments.
How often were they having you report in?
Maybe once, twice a month.
Okay.
You know.
All right. And also during that time period, you did carry around with you a record that said you had committed this crime, which was this particular crime, correct?
Right, and the right not to vote. I mean, they took my voting rights away. I had to live under the strict restrictions of being under parole. You do not go out at night. You do not drive. You do not, you know, all of that, you know, living under those restrictions.
Right, and probably adversely affected your ability. Did you have a job? Or
ability to get a job.
Okay. And obviously your right to travel, like you said, not just going out at night, it probably gave you some kind of restrictions on your ability to travel also. So you have real identifiable harm. Now, you know, the prosecutorial misconduct now is a question of whether it's one where they say it was harmful error. And in what you're getting into when you say they misrepresented the statute, did you have a public defender representing you?
Yes, I did. And okay. It didn't go well.
Usually what happens in something like this is the jury is given the definition of the crime in jury instructions by the judge. And, you know, are they saying that, and was your defense involved in this, is that notwithstanding the judge's jury instructions, the prosecutor got up and said and made representations of what the crime was or what the statute is, notwithstanding the instruction?
The prosecutor gets up and he says, well, he's a nice guy. He's done some great things for the community and everything, but he's a previous offender and he had a firearm and all that. And so but he did not say that there's affirmative sides to that. Like there is an affirmative side to that, meaning that someone can, under certain circumstances, someone can defend themselves.
But didn't
that means anybody legitimately?
Didn't your public defender get up and say and say those things?
He didn't object. You know, there were several times I found that, you know, he should have objected to quite a few things.
Right, and that's one of the criteria under the law for an appeal, whether or not the defense lawyer objects or the defendant objects. That's just one factor. But it sounds like you already won that one. JD, we're going to have to investigate this for you because this is a complicated matter. You're already years down the road. You suffered identifiable harm as Brad has just said. It's been determined there was prosecutorial misconduct. You got your conviction reversed. You were in jail. We're going to have to take your number and talk to you off the air.
Yeah, okay. because I think you've got a situation here that I'm very worried about.
Me too.
And I don't know. I'm really concerned about what went on in the trial. If there were no objections being made, or if there was something happening where the prosecutor was making representations of what the crime is, and somebody didn't look and say, "Listen, you got to follow the jury instruction on what it is."
And the fact that they did not give proper instructions to the jury, that, you know, to me, well, what I found out when I looked up, this is all federal law now where it's gone to. Like federal law says, even if I had investigated by the attorney general's office, and you said, yeah, we've got his records mixed up. Well, that's 3 years later, but they say, and federally, even if they did this accidentally and it resulted in a conviction, they're liable.
Okay, JD, I'm gonna put you on hold. Give Kevin your information, and we're gonna give you a call and see if we can help you. Because the fascinating part of this law is what is prosecutorial misconduct. Of course, you had yours. You won your appeal. But it can be like the district attorney injecting his or her personal opinion into the case, or commenting that and vouching for a witness. Hey, this witness is very true, is very credible because I know them, etc. So there's a lot of interesting examples of prosecutorial misconduct. So we're going to be glad to help you.
And okay. The record's getting mixed up. We got to go to break. There's a question in my mind. Did the prosecutor know they were mixed up? Did they have reason to know?
And commenting on the wrong statute.
Were they just sloppy, or what caused it? So there's a lot of things we want to look at. We got to do it quickly, JD. So we'll give you a call so we can discuss it with you, all right?
Okay, I really need your help, guys. I really am getting to the point where I need some really good attorneys, and I know you guys are great, and you represent the law, and you wouldn't represent any, you know, misrepresent anything, you know, and that's why I really like listening to your show.
Well, thank you for the call. We're going to give you a call, and we'll see if we can help you, okay? I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right, JD from Colorado Springs. We appreciate that. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, give us a call, 303-713-8255. This is a Law Talk show. We talk law. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. We're glad to answer any of your questions. And we have questions, as I said at the top of the show, to our law firm about hit and run. And one of the questions dealt with pedestrians in the street and hit and runs, because that happens, and that's very devastating. And the law about crosswalks. And I think this is going to blow your mind. Because, and in our book, Hit and Run, you know, cowards of the street, that's what we call it, cowards of the street, hit and run, because they are cowards of the street. No question about it. But pedestrians, let's talk about pedestrians and cars. So when you have a crosswalk, and it's clearly identified, if you're and you don't use the crosswalk and you're jaywalking, then basically the general rule in Colorado is that you have to yield to the car. The car doesn't have to yield to you. Now, there's other factors to that, but that's the general rule. And so it's a crosswalk enforcement type situation. If you're legitimately in the crosswalk and you're legitimately crossing, and if there's a light, a walk light, then you have all the rights in the world. If you're jaywalking and you cause the accident, or you dart out in front of a car, then you don't have all of those rights. And it's in our book. But where it gets harder is when you're maybe in a residential subdivision or close to one, and there's no marked crosswalk, but there's curb cuts on the curb, you know, where you can do your bicycle down, or a wheelchair, or a baby stroller, or whatever. And so you would, in your mind, draw imaginary lines across the street on the curb cuts. And the imaginary lines would then be the implied crosswalk. And because many times, and we've done cases where there's an implied crosswalk, there's not one marked, but you're in the crosswalk, and a big question of fact, were you in the crosswalk or not? Who had the rights, who had to yield to who? But in our book, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, there it is. But, you know, Brad, when you're hit by, you're a pedestrian, or you're on your bicycle and you're hit by a car, it's very devastating.
It is devastating. You got to understand that the injuries are going to be much worse. You're going to have a a very difficult time recovering from getting hit by a car, but it's just devastating. But let's remember, you know, the crosswalk isn't the protection device. Sometimes I just cringe when I see people just go walking out in the crosswalk. First of all, understand that even though you may have as a pedestrian a right to use the crosswalk and cars are supposed to yield, you do not have the right to dart out in front of or to jump in front of a car or to just walk out without using due care. You still have to use due care. You cannot move in the path of a vehicle in a way that when the vehicle is so close as to constitute an immediate hazard. And those are tough words. Immediate hazard. Is it close enough to constitute an immediate hazard? So you can't just go walking up the crosswalk and say, well, I've got the right of way, and expect cars to be slamming on their brakes. You do have the right, if there's sufficient time, as Gary was describing, and on your side of the road to walk out in the crosswalk. Now, you don't have the right to go into the crosswalk if you have a pedestrian crossing, if you have a light that says do not enter, or if you have that big red hand telling you you can't enter and it's being traffic controlled. Then you have to obey the traffic control on what you can do. And technically, if you walk out against the traffic control, if it has a stop sign or a stop hand on it and you walk opposite it, out in front of it, and in violation of that, you're not going to have many rights.
Right, you can't violate the traffic control devices, not number one. But it's astounding to learn. I mean, our Colorado statutes, you know, and it's in our book. I'm looking at one on page 19. The statute is 42.4803. Every pedestrian crossing a roadway at any point other than within a marked crosswalk or within an unmarked crosswalk in an intersection shall yield right of way to all cars. So if you're jaywalking, and there's a case on jaywalking, Dennis versus Johnson, if you're jaywalking, you're going to be responsible to yield the right-of-way to the car. You think that's incredible. But think about it. And I've seen, especially in Denver, seen the Denver police cite the pedestrian for these statutes, cite them for not yielding to a car, cite them for not being in a crosswalk. Bottom line, you got to be in a crosswalk. There's other mitigating factors. And then when you have the accident, it kicks in, the whole law of comparative negligence kicks in. What does that mean in English, Gary? What that means is the negligence of the driver is compared against the negligence of the pedestrian. Comparative negligence. What is the percentage of negligence to the pedestrian? What is the percentage of negligence to the driver? Let's say it's 60% to the driver, 40% to the pedestrian. That affects people's recovery as to monetary damages for very devastating injuries. So that's just one part of hit and run. It's in our book. You can get it free at championsofthepeople.com. So, you know, Brad, and we've seen a lot of cases where in the residential areas, out walking, you go across the street, you jaywalk. So are you at the corner? Are you runners? I've done a running case. Come early in the morning. It's dark. They're crossing the street. Here comes a car. Boom. Was the runner in the crosswalk? And those are all questions of fact that have to be ferreted out.
Right, and they are. And the best thing is unless it's absolutely clear, don't go in the crosswalk, period. You're going to lose because you may end up having a great case, and we've had cases like that where the recovery has been significant for our person. But, you know, when we walk away from a case where we've made large recoveries for our clients, we also remember the fact that our clients are still living with the disability or the injury and the pain and the suffering and the harm that has resulted. And that's something that we don't think is necessarily a win situation. Because, you know, you're still looking at a situation where the person is not going to have a normal life.
Right. And so, you know, as we said, the injuries are devastating. But and don't forget about the show that comes up after our show, the Barry and Larry Consumer Real Estate Show, emphasis on consumer. You know, we pitch them every week because we respect them. We like them. They're very professional people. We've done real estate work in our past, and we know what's good and what's bad, and they're good. There's no substitute for experience and the knowledge of expertise in a certain field. If you want any of our books, and today we're talking about Hit and Run, Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. It's got statistics in there. It's got how defenses are in there, what your defenses could be, what your rights are, what the insurance company's rights are, and more importantly, most importantly, how insurance companies try to attack these cases.
And, you know, Gary, something people have to realize, if you're a pedestrian and you got hit by a car that takes off and you can't find him anymore, come see us anyway. There's ways we can find possibly coverage for you if you're a resident relative of a home where there's a policy. If you have your own policy, sometimes your UIM, UM policies are going to extend to give you coverage. They're going to help you recover from the injuries you've sustained. It's important you contact us if you're a victim of any kind of hit and run, or if you're a pedestrian who's been a victim of any kind of collision.
Right. And, you know, the bottom line is you need to protect yourself. And there's a whole, we did a whole show or shows on just finding insurance coverage, right? Just finding insurance coverage. So sometimes it's easy to figure out, sometimes it's not so easy to figure out. But the point of the matter is you have to search for the insurance company and the coverage. And the other point of the matter is many times when we do cases, we find out that the people that are at fault don't tell you the truth about their insurance coverages. They have more insurance and different insurance than they say they do. How do you solve that? Bell and Pollock, we're here for you. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. Any of our books are free. All of our books are free. Or you can get a hard copy by calling our law firm, because we are your champions of the people.